I'm Doug Nadvornik. Today on the Inland Journal podcast, the big political debate in Idaho is about subsidized health care and expanding the Medicaid program for low-income people, as authorized by the Affordable Care Act. Tens of thousands of Idahoans are in what Medicaid expansion supporters call the gap. They're too rich to access the subsidized care through Medicaid and too poor to be able to afford private health insurance. Many in the gap voted last November for Proposition 2, the citizen-generated initiative that was approved with 61% support in Idaho. But conservatives in the legislature and beyond are trying to stop the initiative from being implemented. They say even though the federal government promises to cover a vast majority of the subsidies that make Medicaid so inexpensive to its recipients, that Idaho's still going to get stuck with a big part of the bill. The Idaho Freedom Foundation challenged the constitutionality of Proposition 2. The state Supreme Court took the case, held a hearing, and issued a quick opinion upholding the constitutionality of the measure. And now legislators are trying various ways to blunt the effects of Medicaid expansion. Representative John Vanderwoude, a Republican from Nampa, has introduced legislation that would require those who can access Medicaid to also fulfill a work requirement. His first version would have required a 30-hour-a-week commitment. That bill never made it out of committee, and so he came back this week with a second version. Here he was speaking Wednesday before the House Health and Welfare Committee.
This one changes the work requirements from 30 hours a week down to 20 hours a week. And I might point out that it's 20 hours a week on a average on a monthly basis. It doesn't have to be every week. It's calculated on a monthly basis. And those 20 hours a week can also be part-time volunteering or part-time in training. And the 20 hours a week are based on minimum wage, which ends up being about $150 a week. That would exempt you from the work requirement, and that comes up to about $600 a month is what would, if you earn that or if you have hours of volunteer, that you would then be exempt from this work requirement. Also, if you are going to school, and there are also several other ones, if you've looked at the statement of purpose, those who are exempt are persons under 19, persons over 59, parent or caretaker of children under 18, parent or caretaker of incapacitated person due to illness or disability, a person who has applied for Social Security disability and that has not been determined yet, a person participating in drug and alcohol treatment and rehabilitation, a person applying for or receiving unemployment insurance, pregnant women, and a person also attending a secondary or some type of education half-time. And so those are the people that are exempt from these work requirements. I know there's been a lot of discussion in the previous one we had, and so on the work requirements. And so that's, I believe this is a lighter touch by only going 20 hours.
One other provision would forbid some of the people who would be covered by expanded Medicaid from accessing it. Those whose incomes fall between 100 and 138% of the federal poverty level would instead have to buy private insurance policies through the state's health exchange, probably at higher premiums. Representative Sue Chu is one of three Democrats in the committee who are skeptical.
What I'm concerned about is when I look at this new bill versus the one that you brought to us a couple weeks back, that one gave that population that was between 100 to 138% of federal poverty level the option whether or not they wanted to stay in Medicaid or, you know, opt for that or to go to private insurance. So now with this bill, it's very clear. They're going to head off to private insurance. Now, if private insurance is not as good with mental illness, and they end up crashing and burning, and for some reason, you know, we've got to take care of it. How do we fail-safe that kind of unintended effect? I'm just kind of wondering how to think about that.
Finally, frustrations boiled over for Democrat Muffy Davis.
I'm hoping you can help me here because I am really struggling to understand why we are back here. A couple of weeks later, we were just here a couple of weeks ago with another Medicaid bill, which we heard overwhelming testimony against some of the requirements that were on that. And now here we are 2 weeks later in the same building with a new bill that you are bringing to us that is arguably even more restrictive and has more limitations. And yet the past bill we held in committee, we decided not to vote on. Why are you coming to us again with another more restrictive, more limiting? What is, please help me try to understand that.
That set up an uncomfortable moment in the committee, and the chairman, Republican Fred Wood, stepped in.
Representative Davis and Representative Vandewatta and Representative Blanksma. Now we're talking about the bill. Let's not stray from talking about the bill. I get the fact that this is very emotional to a lot of people, and there's new provisions here that people can interpret some ways, et cetera. So let's just calm down. I think that is in part, Representative Davis, an inappropriate question. You're getting to the motive of why certain people bring certain bills. And so let's just speak to the facts of the bill.
That tension set the stage for about 4 hours of public testimony, which began with Fred Birnbaum as one of the few, if not only, members of the public to support Representative Vandewatta's bill. Birnbaum works for the Idaho Freedom Foundation, which brought the challenge of Medicaid expansion to the Supreme Court.
I want to talk about the three major things that this bill does and why we support it. I think what was missed initially in the presentation of the bill, or at least the discussion, is how much traditional Medicaid has grown in Idaho. In fiscal 99, it was a $533 million program. In 19, it was $2.449 billion, and there's a $54 million supplemental. For fiscal 20, which is what we're appropriating for this year, it'll be $2.83 billion, and in 21, over $3 billion. So I think when you see that sort of growth, it's legitimate to look at ways to curb costs, because after all, Medicaid was a program designed for the most needy. And if we don't protect it by reining in that sixfold growth, then it really won't be available for anyone. The work requirements, as was noted by Representative Vandewatta, are not onerous, and he did go through many of the exceptions. Those that are under 19 or over 59 are exempt, physically or intellectually unfit for employment or exempt, pregnant. I don't want to read the whole list, but it's very generous. I think any reasonable person would see that. And I guess it's somewhat, I guess, disturbing to think that work is described in a negative way. I think we all understand that, you know, through work we fulfill the American dream, and that the goal of the War on Poverty and poverty programs was to nudge people to more self-sufficiency. And certainly work would do that. And what's defined as work here is again, not overly onerous. It's 20 hours a week of work or volunteering or enrolling in post-secondary education. So when you look at the totality of that, I think that this bill is very reasonable. In fact, we would like to see it a little tougher.
But Birnbaum's defense of the bill was soon overwhelmed by waves of Medicaid expansion supporters, many of whom volunteered for the initiative campaign. Here's Samantha Kenny from United Way of the Treasure Valley.
Over the course of my career, I've had many experiences bringing health services to rural areas of Idaho and worked directly with many seasonal workers and their families. These individuals work very hard and many long hours during their peak seasons, but often struggle to find work in their off seasons. Yet they remain in their rural communities to live in because they love their lifestyle there, and who wouldn't? Rural communities are a big part of what makes Idaho great. The strong individuals living there need access to health services and the ability to remain in their rural communities. I'm asking you today to not forget about these Idahoans who work hard and don't have it easy, but make up the rural culture we are so proud of.
Many of those who spoke against putting barriers in front of Medicaid expansion are healthcare professionals. They included Dr. Mary Baranaga, the past president of the Idaho Rural Health Association.
Full Medicaid expansion gives Idaho a historic opportunity to ensure rural Idahoans whose lives will be improved with healthcare access. House Bill 277 would jeopardize the gains we are poised to make in rural healthcare delivery. Work reporting requirements do nothing to help our rural residents get or keep a job or health care. The current proposal would require rural Idaho residents to drive long distances to one of the only four employment and training centers across the state if they aren't working 20 hours a week. That means, for example, someone in Salmon or Grangeville would have to drive up to 3 or more hours each way. That's a lot of gas money. Even if phone or internet options are available for this program, 1/3 of rural Idahoans lack internet access, and many don't have phone access. They wouldn't be able to meet these job training requirements because of communication issues. These folks are proof that bureaucratic one-size-fits-all policies won't work for all Idahoans. Many jobs in rural areas like farming, manufacturing, retail, have variable hours, above average levels of involuntary part-time work, and irregular schedules. Many working people in rural areas would risk losing health coverage simply because they can't obtain enough hours to work each and every month.
A few, such as Kara Parker, told their own stories about accessing health care.
I was born in Idaho and have lived here my entire life. I am an active and registered voter. I've been part of the Idaho workforce and have made state taxable wages since the age of 16. I am now 28. As of October of 2017, I am in the gap. In September of 2017, I started having extreme medical issues, which made it impossible to get out of bed, and I was let go from my job, which also meant losing my health insurance. After months of being bedridden, I went to the emergency room because I thought I was having a stroke. It was there I was told I have a brain tumor. Since then, I have had 50-plus doctor's appointments, including medical imaging and testing of all kinds. I've had 3 spinal taps, a bone marrow biopsy, a chemo port placement, and 2 brain surgeries. I was put on medications that have had limiting and lasting effects on my body and my heart. Even with all of this, I am still battling to qualify for disability so that I am able to get Medicaid. No matter how badly my family wants to pay to get me medical insurance, they can't because I don't have the income to qualify for the marketplace. I have incurred over $100,000 in medical debt that includes money owed to Indigent Services. This will more than likely force me to file bankruptcy.
When the testimony was done, Democratic lawmakers urged the committee to hold this version of Representative Vanderwoude's bill, as it had done with the first version. But this time, Republicans, such as Representative Megan Blanksma, rallied behind the legislation and voted to send it to the full House without an endorsement.
I think that because this is such a large issue, I think it bears debate on the floor in a very serious way. I think that Still, we need to have the opportunity to discuss it as a full body rather than just holding it in the House Health and Welfare Committee. I think that there's also, although it was not reflected in today's hearing, a lot of us are from districts outside of the Boise metro area, and we've also had a lot of communication with our citizens that are not as passionate to expand Medicaid in the way that Proposition 2 did and are not as passionate about spending taxpayer dollars in this manner.
So this bill appears headed for a debate on the floor of the Idaho House of Representatives. If Wednesday's hearing is an indication, opponents will make the case that hiring new people to administer the program will add an expensive new layer of bureaucracy to state government. And they argue the hassle of reporting work hours will drive away the people whom Medicaid expansion is meant to help. We'll pay attention and bring you news about how the debate turns out. Meanwhile, a bill that would introduce voluntary work requirements was introduced on Wednesday. The sponsors of Proposition 2 say it's not exactly what they'd hoped for, but it's legislation they might be willing to support. Tomorrow on the Inland Journal podcast, we'll talk with WSU researcher Nancy Potter, who participated in a national study that's important to tens of thousands of families whose children have a rare disorder called Duarte galactosemia. To find and subscribe to the Inland Journal podcast, search for Inland Journal in iTunes, NPR One, or Google Play, or find it on the Inland Journal page at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Tell us what you think of the program by sending comments to InlandJournal@KPBX.org or call our listener comment line at 509-232-6904. We appreciate your listening. See you tomorrow. I'm Doug Nadvornik.